Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're down to single digits. A week from tomorrow, we will be kicking off the NFL season in earnest alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you, jam-packed show on tap. Of course, we're going to talk plenty of NFL. The NFL refresh betting guide at VSiN dropped yesterday. We have VSiN managing editor Adam Burke, who's going to join us coming up in a half an hour. Also, plenty of college football on deck. Dave Shumate, college football analyst. We're going to dive into all things SEC, get his takeaways from week zero, looking ahead to the lines week one, and in hour two, some college football and NFL blend with VSiN's own Matt Eumanns. He has a great write-up in that betting guide, as I referenced. He's got updated plays for the NFL futures season and some college football week one plays as well. So lots to get to, needless to say, Michael. In addition to, where in the world is Michael today? Because that is not your usual office, I see.
No, it's not. I'm at the great NFL Films here. I got Paul Brown behind me. I am in the Eight Rings conference room, which is kind of nice, named after Coach Belichick. So it's always magical to be up here, Stormy. The pictures, you would just love it. The pictures on the wall are incredible. They go back, to the beginning of the league. They have blend everything in. You know, you walk by, you say hello to Dick Butkus, you see Gale Sayers, you know, you see some of the legends of the game, coaches, George Halas, all that. Yeah. So it's really, you know, they don't offer tours here, but it's just a magical place. And look, I think it's a tribute to the great Steve Sable because he designed it. All the pictures are about him. A lot of movie photos up on the wall because he loved movies. They haven't changed his offense, Stormy. His office is still exactly it was the day he took sick leave. And so they've honored him tremendously because his presence is still in this building, which is really powerful. You could feel them. And I miss seeing him. I worked here when I was with NFL Network. I actually was in this same office. It was my office then. And he would walk by and tell you stories about how it started and him and his dad filming over at Franklin Field with a little camera and started this whole operation right here in Morristown, New Jersey.
That's awesome. I hope I can get out there one day, but sounds like bringing back some good memories, and you're in good company in that room that you're in right now with Paul Brown over your shoulder throughout the course of the show. So that'll be good. We do have, obviously, with the cut down day taking place yesterday, some news that has come out, you know, players ultimately that got waived. We'll see what happens with them. Some certain landing spots, some players moving to new teams as well, including, let's start in Dallas, where we have a lot of news coming out of Cowboys country, where it appears retread quarterbacks in Dallas are just the way to go as they agree to terms on a 1-year deal with Dalvin Cook, who comes over from his worst season of his career in the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, look, he looked like he had no juice in his lower body. You know, and I was a big Dalvin Cook fan, and I think Minnesota knew he wasn't healthy. And when they let him go, they took a big cap hit. But he proved them correct by the way he played. Now, we are in that Instagram world or TikTok world or Twitter world where guys are working out and we see their workouts online. And Cook looked impressive in that workout. I'm not going to lie. You know, he was over there training and you could see him and his body looked good. They need it, right? They need a combination back, right? Zeke is the power back. You know, he's going to be the short yardage player, the goal line runner, which is what he did well for New England when they could get the ball into the end zone. And then Deuce Vaughn is kind of like their change of pace back. Dowdle, I don't know quite what he is. He's not really a power back. He's not a loose play back. Some people think he has great potential. I haven't seen it yet. So they need somebody a little bit in between to help take the place of Tony Pollard, who, again, wasn't the same Tony Pollard we're used to seeing, but was still an effective player for him last year, gained 1,000 yards. I think, to me, if Dalvin has anything left. Now, the reason they put him on practice squad, Stormy, is because they don't want to commit to him right away. Mm. They want to watch him in practice. They want to see how he looks. A workout's a workout. But now you got to put the spikes on. You got to get the shoulder pads on. You got to watch him move as it relates to other players. If he's good enough, I'm sure they'll sign him for the game in Cleveland. If he's not, they'll probably keep him on for another week to see if he can get in shape.
It's funny, Michael, because all anybody was calling for this offseason with the Dallas Cowboys was like, make a move, add somebody, bring somebody in big. And the moves that they've continued to do are... We have had some interesting news with the Cowboys this week in that CeeDee Lamb officially, finally is back on the team, and he has agreed to a four-year, $136 million monster contract, one of the top wide receiver deals in the entire National Football League. He addressed questions yesterday with the media about being ready for week one, as well as his quarterback's contract controversy. Take a listen.
Quite honestly, I don't think it's going to be a step behind at all. I'm ready. I prepare for these moments. I played this game my whole life.
How important is it for you to have Dak in the future here with you?
It's amazing, bro. If you go look at our numbers together, they're at the top of the charts. And I have no doubt that they're going to get a deal done. And we all know that I want Dak here. Jerry wants Dak here, too. So let's just get this under control, kill the speculations. Let's go win.
Kill the speculation, Michael. Easier said than done when we're dealing with Dallas.
Well, but it's unnecessary speculation. Like, I'll ask you, where is Dak going? He's, you know, where is he going to go? So starting quarterbacks, there's only 32 of them. They're like United States senators. There's a quota on how many there can be. So, you know, like the Patriots will have $100 million. Could they sign Dak Prescott next year? Absolutely. They could afford him. They could sign him, and it wouldn't really affect their cap one way or the other. But they got Drake May, so they're not going to sign him. So take them out of it. You know, the Raiders certainly could sign him, but would you really want to go from being the star quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, to go into the Raiders and having to start your career over? I'm not sure of that. Now, state income taxes are even in Vegas, in Nevada, and in Texas, so there's, you know, it's not going to be a financial decision. And I'm sure Jerry would pay him just as much as Mark Davis would if he were available. Okay, New Orleans. Is he going to go to New Orleans? Of course he's not going to New Orleans. They're already $100 million over the cap for next year, and they doubled down on Derek Carr. They can't get out of that contract. So tell me where he's going to go outside of Dallas. Not going to Chicago, not going to Buffalo. Maybe Atlanta might want to bring him in as the third. You know, they could play another $200 million for a third. That makes sense to me. Why wouldn't you?
Maybe Tennessee. I don't know. I'm just thinking, Michael, if you're Dak Prescott and you have the opportunity at the end of this season to, you have the no franchise tag clause, you have the opportunity to see what the market is and what else somebody is willing to give you to force some leverage and force Dallas's hand for what you want to get paid, why wouldn't you at least take that opportunity to see what other teams were willing to give you?
Right. This is all about market realization. It's not about he's leaving.
Yes.
And so it's about, where is the market for Dak Prescott if he becomes a free agent? Is it at $58 million a year? Is it at $55? Is it at $60? I don't know. It's market realization. And at some point, he's going to have to make a decision. Either you take this deal now in January when the season's over with all this guarantee, or you go out and test the market and see if you could do better. I think, you know, he's obviously earned that right, but Jerry is really good at talking. Jerry's very good at convincing, and Jerry's a very good salesman. And so Jerry will have the last laugh there. This isn't the Saquon Barkley conversation with Joe Shane, where promise me you'll let me match any deal. Oh, that was a fake. That was all fake. That was television production. This is real. I mean, Jerry's going to pay him.
Yeah. And speaking of Jerry talking and using a quote like this is real, I did not think that the quotes that I saw from Jerry Jones earlier this week were real when I first saw them. I thought it was fake. He said, nobody can bleep and get this stuff done better than me. The reason I don't let somebody else be the GM is because I don't have anybody that'll do it right. And they're going to have to come to me because I know where it is that you're going to have to pay for. He was dropping F-bombs and expletives all over the place. I was like, what is going on here, Michael? But this was real. So he thinks that he is the best person to do the job. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I just think, like, the stuff with CeeDee Lamb's contract in particular, like, how hard was this deal to get done? Why did it lead, you know, the week before the season to get done?
I have no idea. That one's a mystery. But Jerry's right. I mean, look, you know, if you're a general manager of the Cowboys, either he gives you a budget and allows you to operate independently, or you have to go to him on every single contract on a line item basis. And so, you know, when Jerry says to an agent, I'm not doing that, there's no way the agent can go around Jerry. You know, that's the final answer. I'm not doing that. I own the team. I'm not doing that. Whereas Michael Lombardi said to an agent, we're not going to go there. The agent's like, well, I think I get more out of him, put more pressure on him. You got to put more pressure on an owner. So he's right. But at some point, he's got to get these deals done in a more timely fashion so it doesn't creep up. Every nickel he spends above what he shouldn't spend is taking away from his ability to be competitive in the salary cap market.
Michael, I want to go back to CeeDee Lamb's earlier comments as well about his readiness for week one. He said he's not worried that he's going to take a step back at all. Lamb is currently being picked third on average in fantasy draft position on ESPN Fantasy Leagues, only behind Christian McCaffrey and Tyreek Hill. Do you have any hesitancy about him early in the season and as the year as a whole, given how much time he's missed?
No, and I think, you know, going up to Cleveland where it's not the humidity isn't going to be really devastating. And the fact that they practice in Dallas with humidity, I think he'll be fine. And look, they have symmetry between the two. There's continuity between this team and them. You know, I was going through my notes on my morning lines here today. And, you know, that game there, it's interesting because when you handicap and power rank the teams after the preseason, which I've done, I finished that today. You know, I felt like this was a game that, you know, the Browns are favored slightly. But to me, you know, it's really a pick 'em type game. And if the Cowboys are getting 2.5, I think the market has overreacted way too much to all the negative press coming out of Dallas.
Good to know there, week one. CeeDee Lamb, also the second shortest shot to lead the league in receiving yards this year at 8-1. He's 10-1 to lead the league in receiving touchdowns. Also 10-1, third on the odds board to be named Offensive Player of the Year, coming off what was a franchise record setting season, 1,749 yards. He's also been huge for his quarterback in Dak Prescott, on the field for 95% of Dak's pass attempts the last two seasons, including the playoffs. Dak has a 74% completion percentage to him, 65% and below targeting anybody else. CeeDee Lamb accounting for 34% of the total offense in Dallas. We have another contract we need to discuss with Ja'Marr Chase coming up next. Also, the Browns have how many quarterbacks on their roster? What will happen with Jameis Winston or Tyler Huntley? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase missed all of training camp, holding in due to his contract situation, but he came back over the weekend. Zach Taylor telling reporters yesterday he expects Ja'Marr Chase to be out there on the field week one. Michael, great news for the Cincinnati Bengals there. A little bit more difficult news is that he still does want a contract at the end of the day and reportedly remains in discussions for him to be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. Let's just start there. Does he get a deal done this week or at all this season for one?
Well, I think, you know, look, Mike Brown's made it very clear he wants to sign Ja'Marr Chase. And Mike Brown is not a type of owner who is willing to just throw money around. Mike Brown wants to buy quality. Mike Brown doesn't want to overpay for good. He has no problem paying for great. Mm-hmm. He's evidenced by Joe Burrow's contract, which in light of all these other deals that have come in on the quarterbacks, Joe Burrow's contract holds up pretty well. So I definitely think this contract is going to be – the question is going to be, is he getting Chase's, is he getting Jefferson's deal, or is he getting just slightly above Jefferson's deal? That, to me, is the conversation because he is – you know, you could make the argument he's number two, number three. I mean, I think Tyreek Hill's the best receiver in the game because he scares the living Jesus out of every defensive coordinator in the league. But after that, Jefferson certainly is good. Chase is good. You know, A.J. Brown is a good player. He just signed at $32 million. So the market is really pretty set on this contract. It's just a question of where Mike Brown wants to go. And then the ultimate thing is how much cash are they willing to pay out initially and over the first three seasons?
Well, and that's the thing, Michael, I think naturally you ask the question, does he deserve to be the top paid wide receiver in the National Football League? But I think Tua Tagovailoa said it really well when he was going through his contract negotiations. The market is the market. So whatever you feel like that you are seeing out there in the market, what that price is going to be, that's what this guy's going to get paid. It just depends on some of those more minute details. I mean, it's big dollars and cents details, but in terms of a contract like this, it's minor.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, one of the hard, you know, that's what makes it. I know you don't want to talk about this, but that's what makes the Brandon Ayuk contract so hard to understand why it's not done. Because it's pretty clear he's not in. He's not better than A.J. Brown. He's not better than D.J. Moore. He's a good player, no question. But you, when you're not better than a guy and a guy makes $27.5 million, why would the 49ers voluntarily pay that? Because every dollar they give above the $27.5 million to a player who's not as good as the one who received it, that takes away from their cap flexibility and it takes away from their ability to compete in the salary cap market. So that's why that contract's so damn hard to do.
I don't want to call Brandon Ayuk delusional. Like, that's not kind, but I feel like he has a sense of self that is very different from what the NFL community views him as. He's a very talented player. Yeah. He makes a big difference in that offense, but he's not at the same level of a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, and Ja'Marr Chase. It's not the same.
He's not the same, but you have a hard time. See, he's not a self-aware player. And I'm pretty sure that if they could trade him, they would. I mean, look, they would have traded him to New England. But now the kid doesn't want to go to New England. Okay, now what do you want? You want money or you don't want to go? What do you want? And so to me, it's just fascinating how he wants his cake and eat it too. At some point, you got to declare. I don't envy John Lynch. I don't envy Kyle Shanahan, because when you're dealing with an irrational person when it comes to contract negotiations, I promise you this, Stormy, I think his agent is in the same boat as the 49ers are in. I think he's as frustrated because he can't convince his client to take a deal.
Well, he put his cards on the table here by turning down the Patriots deal, by there not being a deal signed out there with the Pittsburgh Steelers yet. So you can tell what he wants to do. He wants to stay in the 49ers family. So we'll see how things play out. Another team I wanted to look at, Michael, the Cleveland Browns have four quarterbacks on the active roster right now, but are reportedly looking to trade either Jameis Winston or Tyler Huntley, according to Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I mean, Michael, this is a quarterback room with three Pro Bowlers in that room, don't you know? But
I know.
When you see that, like, what are your thoughts? Would you like to get rid of Jameis Winston, considering how many QBs you had to go through last year?
Well, I think they don't want to carry four. They can't get any of them on their practice squad. And so they're kind of stuck a little bit. They're trapped in this area. And I think by holding four on the team right now, they're telling the other 31 teams in the NFL, we're not cutting anybody. So either trade for them or you're not going to get them. Mm-hmm. And that'll last 3 or 4 days. It'll probably last till, well, players are off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, either Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or they're off Friday to Monday. So you got 4 days off. So there's no messing with the roster. You can kind of handle that. But at some point, the rubber's going to meet the road here, and they're going to have to make that decision. And I'm sure, looking at the quarterback market, I'm sure there's some teams that certainly could use Huntley. He's a Pro Bowler. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure Winston will get out there and get as much as money, much attention, because he is turnover prone. I mean, you put him in a game, he's going to do a great job on the pregame speech, but he ain't going to do a very good job of protecting the football.
Yeah, but I mean, Dorian Thompson-Robinson isn't exactly solid as a rock either.
I know. That shocked me, Stormy. That shocked me that they picked him as the backup. Like, what did they see in him?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, because we saw him in the regular season last year, and that's a big reason why they had to go get Joe Flacco off the couch, because he wasn't up to snuff. So, neither here nor there. I'm just like it's an interesting conversation, I feel like, in this quarterback room. But obviously they did go through so many last year. We know that quarterback depth is so important in the entire National Football League last year. Remember, there are 32 teams. Over the last 2 years, we've seen 134 different starting quarterbacks. Let's go down the list, though. Yesterday being cut day, teams getting down to the 53-man rosters here. Odell Beckham Jr., Michael, will begin the season on PUP. He'll miss at least the first four games. Are we ever going to see him play again? What's happening here?
I mean, I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight knowing Odell's not going to be there for the opening game. Oh, my God. Has there ever been a guy who's gotten more headlines for doing less? I mean, seriously.
He had one great catch. Yes, that's the thing I always come back to. He made an unbelievable catch that has paid his bills for the rest of his life.
I mean, it's really remarkable. And people treat it like, I mean, Baltimore gave him $18 million last year. $18 million. He conned Baltimore into getting $18 million off of coming off an injury. And he had, you know, had 64 targets, and he had 35 receptions. 35 receptions and 64 targets. I mean, that's a 50% ratio. That's like really bad. That's really bad. So for me, you know, which it's another story. If he plays, who cares? Now, the one thing I will say in defense of Odell is in Miami, he'll be the third option. He's not even going to be part, you know, so he's getting the worst corner on the opponent's team. He's not going to get any coverage rolled to him. I'm not sure he'll get open against the worst corner because I'm not sure he's got any juice left in his lower body.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins have the best wide receiver in the entire league, who you already detailed is the one guy that really scares defensive coordinators in Tyreek Hill. Jaylen Waddle opposite him. So he's a luxury piece for this Miami offense that's loaded with wide receiver talent, and quite frankly, just skill position talent in general. Another player I wanted to touch on here, Michael, A.J. Dillon on injured reserve here this season as well with the Packers. So unfortunately, you're not going to get that 1-2 punch you were looking for, it seems.
No, I mean, and, you know, look, I think that probably helps Green Bay, and it helps them in the sense they signed Jacobs because they didn't want to. They didn't want to have to go through. They wanted a power back and they wanted a receiver on the field at the same time. So for me, I think that's why they did it. And I think at the end of the day, Jacobs has got to prove that he's not declining in his ability, that his metrics from last year, which were trending all the way down, are going to be better this year. And that's a big get, because I'll tell you what, when you watch the tape, Aaron Jones was really good for him last year. There's no question. He made that offense go when he was healthy and he was running hard, making people miss, because this offensive line is good in pass protection. I would not say it's great in run block. They don't get a lot of movement. And Aaron Jones made a lot of plays.
He was particularly excellent down the stretch in the postseason, like a lasting impression, the guy that we saw in Green Bay there. With the Rams as well, how surprised were you to see Sean McVay's comments on Kyren Williams that he's going to be returning punts this year? The fantasy football community is losing their mind.
Yeah, well, I think to me, what he did was he decided to use them, and then they claimed Blake Schroeder off of the 49ers list. Now, this is the kid from Missouri who led the Southeast Conference in rushing. The Niners were trying to get him on their practice squad, and the Rams took him, which tells me that maybe they're going to be, as fantasy players, when we look at the Rams, we've got Blake Corum, we've got Schroeder, and then we've got Williams, who also. So I think you're going to see a committee.
Yeah, it appears like it. I just think people that thought that Kyren Williams was going to get all these touches as RB1, that's going to get cut into now. So if you were somebody who's already done your draft, you're kind of losing your mind a little bit to an extent there. But I think Blake Corum will be a good addition there. The Rams are a team that I am high on this year in our NFL betting guide, which VSiN.com/subscribe. You get the NFL guide, the college football guide, everything we do here at VSiN, including all of the picks from our hosts, experts, and guests. But I have them making the playoffs at a plus money price. I think that they're going to go over their season win total. As long as Matt Stafford can stay upright and that offensive line does their job, I really like what the Rams come to play with. I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league last year. They end up winning 10 games and making the playoffs. We're going to hit the break. We'll continue a little bit of this NFL talk because managing editor of VSiN.com, Adam Burke, put a ton of work into that NFL betting guide that I am referencing. He's going to join us coming up next. We're also going to get his best bets for week 1 of the college football season. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thanks for hanging out with us on YouTube TV, VSiN.com, iHeartRadio, the iHeartRadio app. You can even tell your Alexa, Alexa, play VSiN on the iHeartRadio app, and she'll do it. It's amazing. It's like technology is incredible. Michael,
use that, Stormy? Are you and Alexa close? Are you two handling each other? Are you getting along?
We've been through this, Michael. I do not trust technology. I do not like AI is something that I can't handle. I will say something to you about a chair that I'm considering for the living room, and then I'll have 80 ads for a chair. Like, I'm not letting Alexa get in there. I'm not giving her my information. I don't.
She's
trust
already
it.
There. You're not going to stop her. You can't contain. You can only hope to contain her.
Well, I need to, if I get one, the only thing that I would say is, Alexa, please purchase the NFL Refreshed Betting Guide at VSiN, because this thing is unbelievable, and it has taken so much work from so many people to get together, most notably our guest who joins us now, Adam Burke, on the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN managing editor of VSiN.com. He has put in so much time and effort, not only with putting this thing together, but wrangling all of us hosts like myself to get the picks in. Adam, how are we doing? And how did you handle such a tough task, to be honest?
Hey, good to be with you, Stormy, Michael. Look, I think honestly the toughest task I have in my life is dealing with my Alexa, because I swear at mine all of the time. So one day in my sleep, she's going to find a way to become sentient and kill me.
Oh my gosh, you can't go full Jerry Jones on your Alexa.
You know, we don't get along. She doesn't do what she's told sometimes, so I have to yell at her a little bit. But look, as far as the updated NFL betting guide goes, 40 pages to get you ready for the upcoming season. Some post-preseason updates from Zachary Cohen and I. Zach took the NFC. I took the AFC. We also have feature articles in there from Steve Mackinnon, Mike Somich, with a really, really interesting piece about setting calendar invites as reminders for things that he wants to bet throughout the course of the season. I thought that was a really eye-opening piece, a very, very good strategy. Speaking of strategies, I wrote about some contest strategies. My partner Mark Goldberg and I from Spooky Express finished in the – we're in the final 15. We were able to monetize our entry in the Circus Survivor last year. So I got some contest strategies in there. But, Stormy, I think the headline, as you mentioned, more than 60 best bets from our VSiN hosts and contributors for the upcoming season.
All right, Adam, let's talk about week one college football, North Carolina, Minnesota. I want to change that. I don't want to go college football. I want to talk about your love affair with Will Levis. I need to hear why you think he's going to throw for over 3,400 yards this year. I definitely need to hear this. Stormy's waiting in the wings to see what I'm going to say on this one.
So, you know, look, I mean, I think there's a team or two that I really like going into every NFL season that the market isn't super high on. And this year for me, it's the Tennessee Titans. I like a lot of the things that they've done here. I like how they've upgraded the offensive line. I think Cushenberry at center is a really, really good player. They got J.C. Latham in the first round of the NFL draft, top 10 pick, actually. So Levis has better protection. He clearly has weapons around him. I know DeAndre Hopkins is hurt at the outset of the season here, but you know, Calvin Ridley, Tyler Boyd, proven NFL caliber wide receivers. The running back room, Tony Pollard's a guy who can catch the football out of the backfield. Tajai Spears is a guy who's going to have a big year, I think. So I like a lot of the pieces that the Titans have on offense. And furthermore, I like Brian Callahan and I like Bill Callahan. Bill Callahan, a guy who I'm very familiar with, offensive line coach of my Cleveland Browns. I think the offensive line is going to be good. I think Levis is going to take some big steps forward because he's got great skill position talent now. And also, look, from a game state standpoint, the Titans still have a win total in that 6.5 range, right? They're probably going to trail a lot. So Levis is going to get opportunities to throw the football in the second half, and he's got some great pass-catching weapons to do it.
Now, Michael, I know you're not a believer in the Mayo man, but I do think Adam makes a good argument here. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the Mayo man, I know. I mean, look, the thing I have a problem with him is he's so inconsistently inaccurate. You know, he's 58% completion percentage. And, you know, he and that offensive line was atrocious. So I agree with the Callahan offensive line angle. I just think it's hard to follow Vrabel and play well. I'm not sure the running back situation. I think Spears is great. Pollard, to me, wasn't the same back he was before the injury. So we'll see how that goes. But if they're going to be an 11 team and those two tackles are going to be opened up to the pressure, I think Levis is prone to make mistakes. Now, you know, last year he threw 8 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. I just worry about him being consistent down after down after down. And last year, as someone who bet on Tennessee, not bet, but recommended betting on Tennessee in a few games, it was painful to watch him not throw the ball effectively. But there were times, like in the Miami game on Monday night, he did.
So that's what it is, Michael. You're scorned. I see. That's okay.
I am scorned
so
by him. I mean, I can remember that Colt game that went to overtime. I mean, he can't even complete a simple out. I was going crazy. I was sitting there. Bella was getting mad at me.
Again, that Will Levis prop over 3,400.5 passing yards. It's -110. The Titans season win total sitting at 6.5. Adam Burke joining us on the Progressive guest line, VSiN.com managing editor. And we talked last week when you were on the show, Adam, about all of the college football resources that we're going to have up at VSiN.com throughout the season. That includes you with regular articles, best bets up. As you looked at the week one slate coming into this week, we saw all of the underdogs ultimately cashing in week zero. What was the first game that really jumped out at you for week one from a betting standpoint?
Yeah, the first game that jumped out, actually, we've seen a line movement in this game. And I had North Carolina 2.5-point favorite against Minnesota throughout the course of the summer once I got my college football power ratings done. That's more or less where the line is now. And people don't seem super concerned about the fact that Mac Brown came out and said, look, I'm going to play both quarterbacks. I'm going to play Max Johnson, the Texas A&M and LSU transfer, and also Connor Harrell. People don't seem to mind that, so I'm okay with it. I took North Carolina in as a dog before this line move actually took place. I think under three, it's still worthwhile to take. Once you get to three, I don't think this one crosses through three, but once you get to three, you lose a little bit of line equity because that is a key number in the football betting sphere. So once it gets to three, if it gets to three, I'd be off of this game. But I think at 2.5, I still like North Carolina. Still think there's a little bit of line value here. Max Brosmer comes in as the New Hampshire transfer from Minnesota. Good player at the FCS ranks, really good player. Threw for almost 5 Bills against Central Michigan last year. But Minnesota just doesn't run that kind of offense. They don't have a lot of explosive plays. They run the football a lot. It's very boring. Hey, maybe they change with Brosmer. Maybe they think he's a better quarterback than what they've had. And maybe my power rating's a little bit wrong on Minnesota. But for now, I like the Tar Heels in this game on Thursday night.
All right, Billy Napier's big game. I mean, he's got Graham Mentz from Wisconsin in his second season there. Tell me how you think Mario Cristobal's Miami team's going to stack up against him.
Yeah, I got to say, I was kind of hoping you wouldn't ask me about this game because I think this is a difficult one. I like Miami a lot. I have them in the college football betting guide to win the ACC, and that is the conference that I previewed. But Mario Cristobal is a lot to overcome. You know, Cam Ward, Damian Martinez, two really, really good transfers on the offensive side. I think Shannon Dawson is a good offensive coordinator. And Miami always has defensive talent. It's just a matter of whether or not they get the production that they should out of them. And I think this year they should. But look, Cristobal in a close game like this, Napier opens the season with a seat that is very, very hot. Florida's got a miserable schedule. They're a talented team, but there's a reason why their season win total has been in that 5 range, 5.5 throughout the course of the offseason, because their schedule's brutal, and it starts here with this one. I lean Miami because I think they're the better team on both sides of the ball, but man, trusting Cristobal against an SEC-caliber team is very, very scary.
Yeah, Florida with the most difficult schedule in the country this year. It's a gauntlet. But Miami, people already liked them to win the ACC. Now those odds have gotten shorter since Florida State lost in week 0 to Georgia Tech. Since I don't want to set you up with another game that you hope we don't ask you about, what else do you like on the slate?
You know what? I'm going to go to the game that you're working here this week on Friday night, TCU and Stanford. This is one that's not a power ratings play for me. I actually have TCU a 10.5 point favorite in this game, so I'm more or less on the number. It's 9.5 now. There were some 10s here this morning. I like Stanford a little bit in this game. I think Troy Taylor in his second year is going to do some good things with Ashton Daniels at quarterback. I think his defense will get better as well. I like the skill position talent that the Cardinal have. And for TCU, I mean, last year they lost a ton from the college football playoff team that Sonny Dykes had in his first season. Josh Hoover's a guy who will probably play well at the quarterback position, but they have a new defensive coordinator here in Andy Avalos, who I think will be good long-term, but I don't know about him being good right away here against Troy Taylor, the former Sacramento State head coach, who's a brilliant offensive mind. So I like the trees getting 9.5 here on Friday night at home in Palo Alto.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think – go ahead, Stormy. But I like Troy Taylor, too. I think he's done a really good job. And his team, I mean, last year against a very good Arizona team, he took him into the fourth quarter. I think he'll get this program turned around. I really do. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I was just going to say there is a lot of optimism around Stanford because you think last year they were bottom three in returning production in the entire country, had 17 of their starters out the door. All those players who were new and figuring it out last year have reps, have experience, should be in a better position here to start the season. Adam, you are awesome as always. We so appreciate your time. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Good to be here. I just want to say we're going to have over 30 pieces of college football and NFL content on a weekly basis over at vsin.com. So if you're not a pro subscriber yet, now's the time to become one.
Absolutely is. Thank you so much, Adam. vsin.com/subscribe is how you can do that. You will get the college football betting guide, which is still extremely beneficial as we are kicking off the season. The refresh NFL guide with updated injury reports and everything we saw from the preseason, as well as everything we have to offer at VSiN, covering every sport you can imagine, to be honest, including expert picks and analysis. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, plenty more college football to dive into with Dave Shoemate, college football analyst and former director of player personnel.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
So week 0 was just the appetizer we needed for college football, because this week one lineup is stacked. We have some unbelievable games that are coming up this weekend and some great betting opportunities as well. To continue our college football conversation, excited to welcome in Dave Schumme on the Progressive Guest Line, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel, also now a contributor for SEC Unfiltered. So heavy deep dive into SEC country for week one here, Dave. Like, first of all, a couple of these high-level games, which one is most intriguing for you coming out the gates in the opener?
First, Stormy and Mike, appreciate y'all having me on again. It's always a pleasure coming on. First, the game I'd probably look to the most, I feel like the Notre Dame, I know in college, it's the kind of the low-hanging fruit. When college game day's there, ESPN's there for the Notre Dame at Texas A&M game. I think this is kind of big from a perspective because if you – even outside the SEC landscape a little bit, if Notre Dame were to win this game, I feel pretty good about them going to get in the playoffs. Again, we're 11, 12 weeks away, but I feel really good. So a massive game for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. For Mike Elko and them, he's going up against his former quarterback, Riley Leonard and them. I think this game specifically is really a battle. I think both defenses are going to get theirs. It's going to come down to Connor Wigman, Texas A&M's quarterback. Him and the offensive line, if they can create some explosive plays, limit the turnovers, I think whoever does that the most, because also Notre Dame, they're without, who is it, the Fisher kid left and Joe Alt left, all to go to the NFL draft. So I think they lost one of their left tackle for the season in fall camp. So they have a bunch of question marks on the offensive line. Both teams have question marks on the offensive line. I give the nod. If this game was in South Bend at a neutral site, I'd probably go Notre Dame. Something tells me Kyle Field wills them to a win. That defense with Mike Elko, I think Connor Wieman makes a couple more plays. But that game's the one that kind of catches my eye because I think it has a ton of playoff implications for both teams.
Dave, I think I agree. I love that game, and I agree with you. Notre Dame's schedule, and if they get by that one, if Riley Leonard continues to improve and develop, they certainly can be in the top 12. Why wouldn't they be, right? Yeah. But the one that interests me the most, the one that I think has the long-term implications to it, is Georgia-Clemson. Because we know Dabo does not want to get into the transfer portal. He's been anti-transfer portal. But if he gets beat by two touchdowns by his neighboring Georgia, and you know, you've been a recruiting caterer before. I mean, this is a turf battle game, right? This is who's going to get Georgia players on their team. Is it going to be Georgia or Clemson? Clemson won a national championship with a lot of Georgia players. So yeah. How do you think this game goes? And if Dabo loses, what do you think the effect of that loss will be?
How this game, you're right, Mike, it's Atlanta, the state of it, really weird Georgia. When I was at Georgia, we kind of called it the state of Atlanta. Obviously, the state of Georgia, everyone comes and recruits there. You're right. And Clemson, who just really recruits the high school side of things, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's a conversation for another day. It's kind of like a matchup of different rosters. You got Clemson going straight high school. Georgia predominantly does. They're homegrown as well. But they'll bring in some mixture, some portal kids as well. This game, to me, really – I think Georgia's got the deepest offensive line in the country. I think LSU may have the best starting five, but I think when injuries inevitably happen, Georgia has the depth with Stacey Searles there as their offensive line coach. I think everybody kind of gets enamored a little bit with the how's Clemson going to be able to create explosive against Georgia's secondary. Georgia's kind of has some question marks in their back end too. They got one returning guy in the secondary, Daylon Everett. They may start a true freshman at one of the safety spots. And you know, Mike, just as well as I do, Kirby Smart requires a lot of communication on that back end of that safety spot next to Malachi Starks. Is he going to put a freshman in that role? I really think Georgia's going to lean on Clemson. I think by middle into the third quarter, I like the defensive lineman for Clemson, Peter Woods, young cat, sophomore, does a really good job against the run for being a young guy. But I think Georgia's just offensive line's going to lean on them probably towards the middle of the third quarter. Key thing to watch, though, Kirby Smart wouldn't say it. The Florida running back transfer, Trevor Etienne, may be suspended due to a DUI. They're also without Roger Robinson, who I think has a toe injury. He's going to be out. So Georgia's running back room, who we all know, they recruit a lot of good guys, will be thin. A guy to watch, though, true freshman, Nate Frazier from Modern Day in California. Really good player, explosive threat. Georgia's running back room this year, I think, is going to be one of those rooms. We see a bunch of ground and pound. Probably the most explosive room they had in a while. What this could mean for Dabo, I still think win or lose, it's going to be Clemson and Miami in the ACC championship game in Charlotte. I actually think Clemson's going to compete for the ACC no matter what. What this means for them in recruiting, I don't really know. I still think Clemson will get theirs in recruiting. I don't really think it's going to have some massive impact from a recruiting standpoint because I think both teams are still going to recruit well across the board.
And Clemson, the new favorite in the ACC at plus 280. Georgia in this game, a 13.5 point favorite, the total 48.5. The last time these two met, coincidentally, was the last time that Georgia was an underdog in 2021. They have since been a favorite 44 straight games. So that gives you some insight into how good this Georgia Bulldogs team has been under Kirby Smart. Also, Notre Dame that we talked about earlier, +3 at Texas A&M, the line there. LSU-USC is going to be right here in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. LSU currently laying 4. The total is 64. Neither team has really had a lot of success against the spread at neutral site games. You see both of these teams, we expect to have good high-flying offenses. Defenses, will they take a step or not? I don't know. Do you have a gut feeling on this game?
I feel like you're right. Both these teams look in the mirror and they probably see each other. Yeah. Got two new defensive coordinators, Blake Baker coming over from Missouri to LSU. D'Anton Lynn literally just drove across the street from UCLA to USC. I think the key matchup here, if I'm Brian Kelly, and it's probably going to get Brian Kelly excited because he can go back to his 2012, 2016 Notre Dame days and probably be like, you know what, we got one of the best offensive lines in the country. We probably got a good duo of running backs and Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson. I think he can go lean on that defensive front that doesn't really have the body types that D'Anton Lynn, the new defensive coordinator, wants. I mean, a name SEC fans would be familiar with, Bear Alexander's a defensive tackle for USC, transferred from Georgia. That'll be key. I think LSU's got the biggest mismatch advantage in the entire weekend there. I think it's the LSU offensive line versus the USC defensive line. I think that's the biggest matchup advantage for anyone in the entire country. I like LSU to cover here. I do. The game was back in the spring, summer. I was kind of toss up, but as this game's gotten closer, I do like LSU. I'm still concerned with some of their stuff they get later in the year, but I think in this specific game, they'll go out physical. I think this is a Brian Kelly type game. They can't let Garrett Nussmeier go beat them with turnovers. I think to some extent both offenses are going to get theirs because the defenses will be improved. But a thing to watch too, you're going to see a ton of pressures from both these defensive coordinators, a ton. D'Anton Lynn, Blake Baker, go watch the USC spring game. I think he was in cover zero, I think 25, 30 snaps. I mean, they're both going to try to force turnovers because I think they know, hey, we need to force some turnovers, be good in the red zone, force field goals. But I think LSU ultimately ends up leaning on USC from the second half.
How about the Battle of Florida? Miami, Mario Cristobal, everybody's waiting for him to basically, not honor, but live up to his contract. And then, of course, you got Billy Napier, who's really hoping to get a contract next season. What's your thoughts on this game?
Mike, kind of feels like, I don't know if you're a WWE guy, kind of feels like a loser leave town kind of Edge Matt Hardy matchup in the mid-2000s. I don't know. It kind of just feels, again, a long season ahead no matter what for both of them. This is that other game I feel like. I mentioned with the Notre Dame-Texas A&M game, it being at Kyle Field. Some of these stadiums, this was at a neutral site or in Coral Gables or in Miami Gardens. I would probably lean Miami. I do think this is where Florida, you know, Florida fans aren't real fired up about Billy Napier right now, but I do feel like they feel like, hey, the ball's in our court, 3:30 Eastern. We can help go will, quote unquote, our Gators, our team, to a win at the Swamp. A matchup there I'm interested to see is Miami has some guys back in the offensive front, but they're missing their center who ended up getting drafted, Matt Lee, who was a UCF transfer when I was at UCF. He was one of their guys that made all the calls last year, good guy, a good player all the way around. They could be a good NFL player. They had brought in a transfer that has not played a lot. He's playing there. I think guys like Cam Jackson, Florida's interior defensive line is more underrated than people are thinking. Cam Ward, Miami's quarterback, transferred from Washington State, Incarnate Word. This will be the loudest environment he's ever played in. I could see a lot of pre-snap penalties with Miami here because this game is at Florida. I think Graham Mertz has played in these atmospheres a little bit before. I think he makes the less turnover prone. Again, if this was at Miami or the neutral site, I'd probably go Miami because I do think they have the better roster from top to bottom. I just think that center spot no one's talking about with a first-time starter at Miami in an environment like the Swamp, in an underrated Florida defensive tackle room, I think that's kind of the spot, the position group matchup to kind of watch there.
Florida getting 2.5 plus 110 on the money line, total 54 in that one. Miami under Mario Cristobal has not had success in the ATS role as a favorite. 4-11 ATS as a favorite, third worst among power teams since he took over. Dave, you are awesome. I swear to you, I have like 30 more questions and we didn't get to it. So we will have you again. Thank you so much for your time.
Perfect. I'll come on whenever y'all want. I appreciate y'all having me. Y'all have a good day.
Dave Shoemake crushing it.
Thank
also,
you, Dave. Appreciate it. Great job.
His 2024 college football guide also unbelievable. It's like 344 pages, so detailed, so good. Really appreciate his time and insight. We're going to hit the break. When we come back here on the Lombardi Line, we're resetting with the news of the day. We are in single digits, ladies and gentlemen. The NFL season is kicking off in just over a week. We had rosters cut down yesterday. Plenty of things to get into. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.